The E-Commerce Fuel Podcast is brought to you by Fulfill.io, the ERP built natively for e-commerce sellers. Fulfill streamlines the complexity in your business to save you time and money. From smart order routing to warehouse management, accounting to inventory tracking, they take all of your complexity and all the things that take a lot of time and manual effort and streamline them under one unified tool. Their clients range from seven-figure brands all the way through companies doing hundreds of millions of dollars per year so they can grow and scale with you. And they're the highest rated ERP in our community of private sellers, according to member reviews, scoring higher than Odoo, Skubana, Brightpearl, and yes, even NetSuite. Actually scored quite a bit higher than NetSuite. So if you want to streamline the complexity in your business, check them out at ecommercefuel.com/fulfill. The E-Commerce Fuel Podcast is brought to you by OneClick Upsell, the most popular, largest upsell app in the Shopify marketplace, trusted by over 11,000 users, over 1,900 of those big spending Shopify Plus stores, and they've generated over $200 million in revenue for the merchants that use them. And you may be thinking, oh, hey, Andrew, I've heard of OneClick Upsell. I know these guys, but do you really? Do you know what they've rolled out recently? They've got some cool new stuff. For their pre-purchase and their post-purchase upsells, you can now select from multiple different offers to present your customers. So instead of having them just have to pick from one single thing, you can give them the option to pick from multiple upsells, which helps and has proven to increase the number of people who actually take you up on those upsells. So if you're not using upsells in your store, it's an amazingly easy, fast way to increase your average order value and your revenues. So check them out at ecommercefuel.com/upsell. Hey, it's Andrew here, and welcome to the E-Commerce Fuel Podcast, the show dedicated to helping seven and eight-figure e-commerce brand owners build incredible businesses and amazing lives. And it is, oh man, we are pushing second half of March here, and in the March 5th through the 8th, we got the E-Commerce Fuel community together for, I think it was our eighth annual ECF Live in San Diego, California for 3.5 days of adventures and learning and connecting and playing laser tag in children's museums and taking over aircraft carriers and having great lunches and just more than anything, connecting deeply with fun, smart, interesting, in the trench entrepreneurs. And such a fun event. Always love recapping this and joining me to talk about all the things, reminisce, talk about our takeaways, and just generally have a good time is Katrina McKinnon. She is the owner of copysmiths.com, which is a high-end content agency and production group for content for e-commerce stores and other, coming all the way from Australia. Katrina, welcome.
Andrew, thank you for having me. This is the best birthday present I could possibly ask for.
It's your birthday. I didn't know that. Happy birthday.
I was just delighted that you would be the first person I spoke to today, because it's early in the morning here in Australia. You're the first person that I'm speaking to today, and I just love this. It's the best birthday present I could possibly have, is spending time with you, one of my favorite people.
I appreciate that. I don't know if that's genuinely true, but you are very kind. And what are you doing for your birthday, after, apart from debriefing a business conference? Granted, I'm a little biased. I think it's fun, but hopefully you've got some fun stuff planned for later today. What's on the docket for your birthday?
Going to go for lunch with one of my dearest friends, Kylie. My children will make me dinner tonight, which I'm really excited about. Spending time with my gorgeous husband. It's just the simple things in life at the moment, because I've had some time away in the US, chatting with you guys, and now I'm back and just enjoying my family. So that's what I'm doing for my birthday.
Amazing. Well, I had no idea. Well, thank you for recording this on your birthday.
I'm gonna get you with that one.
Well played.
This live was amazing. That was a very good precursor for my birthday. So thank you. My birthday month.
So apart from me roping you doing a recap episode on your birthday, Katrina was she was a keynote speaker on our panel about AI. She also ran a breakout session, co-led a breakout session on AI at the event. And so we're going to be diving into some AI thoughts as well, plus a bunch of takeaways and kind of some looking towards the future. I'm going to be recapping all of it, but I thought we could start out, Katrina, talking about the event. So when I think about, for people who haven't been before, and we just published a big blog post over at ecommercefuel.com. I'll link up to it in the show notes, that has a ton of media overview of the event, a big kind of a highlight video reel, all the stuff kind of like this, but in a slightly different version. Thank you to Patrick Rowland on the team for putting that out there. But the event, if you haven't come before, it's 3.5 days. We did it in San Diego, kind of have an opening party. We did an opening party night, which is really fun. Did it on an aircraft carrier. We have a day of a lot of content, some keynotes and some breakouts on Monday party. And then Tuesday, we take off on adventures where we have breakout sessions in the morning, but then we all kind of take off for most of the second half of the day and do a bunch of stuff. We had, I think, like 7 or 8 different options for adventures. And then we come back Wednesday for a mix of kind of content, fun, long lunches, things like that. But I had a great lunch on Wednesday with a handful of people. One person mentioned, like, this is the Burning Man for e-commerce entrepreneurs. And I was like, that's awesome. I'm going to try to follow up with you about that for a test pilot because I love it. And it is like,
except we don't get naked and just walk through deserts. Or is that for next year? Is that what we're planning? Are those the changes that you're talking about?
No illicit drug use, no burning massive piles of art at Yes Clothing.
So now, everyone, it's time to get naked and hold hands.
We don't have insurance for that. That would be the end of e-commerce, y'all. Yeah, it's we really try to make it. To everyone who came out, you know, and thank you for coming if you haven't been before. Yeah, a lot of trying to get people out of the conference room. Like, as I think I maybe mentioned this, we had our opening party was on an aircraft carrier, which was really fun. We hired a Tom Cruise impersonator, which was actually pretty good.
Hysterical. He was amazing.
Did you get a picture with him?
I did not, but I chatted to him and he stood next to me and I could not believe it. And he was brilliant. He was so much fun.
He was super fun. And actually, I actually asked him, I was like, man, this is, I was talking about his family a little bit, getting to know him. And he's like, yeah, this is how, you know, my wife and I met. I was doing the Tom Cruise thing and that's how we connected. So he's a really nice guy, very convincing.
Is there any chance we could level up next year and get an Andrew Yedirian impersonator? Is that a possibility?
That's not a level up. That is definitely a huge down.
I think we should have a vote. I think if we voted, I'm going to do a poll in the community. I'm right onto that. I am going to do a poll. I'm going to do a vote in the community. And if we get more than 300 people who vote, then we have to actually do that.
Oh, if people want to subject themselves to two of me, one is bad enough. But if you do two, I am up for. I would be. I mean, if people want it, I'm happy to watch somebody just mimic me all night.
Steve Chu will stand in. He'll be your impersonator.
Oh, if we got a Steve Chu impersonator, that would be really fun. So I'm totally on board with that. One other thing we did was we did houses. So this is a new concept that we. So the idea is like we had probably 300 people this year, right around 300 people. And as an event grows, 300 people isn't a massive conference by any means, but it's also not a tiny conference. And it's hard to get to know people as easily or get around to it, see as many people. And so we had this idea of having houses or little small pods of 30 people that could connect really deeply. And I think overall it worked well. It wasn't, maybe a few things we'll tweak for next year, but in general, it was great to have these little pods that people could get to know through speed networking, through dinners, through some competitions, some other things like that. I think we'll do that again. We also you went surfing, Katrina, like, yes. I remember we were talking years ago and I'm going to roast you about this because I said I was going to, but, we were talking about events in Australia and I think I mentioned like, oh, hey, maybe we could do like a surfing event or something. And you just said, Andrew, not everyone loves surfing or sport activity. Some of us just want to chill out and drink some wine and relax. And lo and behold, you were out there in the water just, you know, trying to fight fruitlessly against, I don't know, you probably had more success than I did, but just getting demolished out there by the waves with the rest of the lemmings in the water. But I loved seeing you out there. That was awesome. And I didn't think, you know, given your previous comments, was not expecting to see you out there. Was that your first time?
No, let me just correct this story a little bit. One of the ECF lives we went to, you were just like, yeah, we're all going to go and play basketball. And I was like, Andrew, we're not all American. We don't all want to play basketball. And I just don't want to sweat all the time. You know, just because you guys are active doesn't mean I want to be. And so then that was this whole thing of like, why can't Andrew just understand that there are different types of humans in the world and it's not all about Andrew and his, what he wants to do. But anyway, so I do appreciate that there were some other activities. I noticed that the Chill Out Do Nothing group, I think they had an enormous amount of fun. They were, you know, very relaxed. I personally thought I'm going to try this surfing thing, this surfing lesson. It was brilliant fun because the week before I had swum in the Pacific Ocean on the other side, on the eastern side of Australia. And so I thought I'm going to swim on the western side of the United States in the Pacific Ocean. That was my goal. But I think I spent more time under my board than on top of my board. It was brutal out there. Those like 2-foot waves really took it out of me. So I ended up sitting on the shore. But then I met a guy called Peter. Remember the guy who brought the fancy car? Like, he hired the fancy car to come to the event and he took people for rides.
Of course. Peter Keller, yeah.
Yes, so he was delightful. So I was literally sitting on the beach with him just trying to catch my breath. And here he is. He's into weightlifting. He runs this amazing website with weightlifting stuff, and just butchered that. But anyway, and he was just sitting there and he was like chatting. And so we just chatted and connected about, and we spoke about his business and a few things that I thought that he could do with content and AI in his business. So, you know, it wasn't a total fail. It was a chance to get to sit on a beach once I had been brutally beaten up by the Pacific Ocean yet again. So yeah, thank you for that. That was fun times.
Oh, I was right there with you. I'd go out for 10 or 15 minutes and totally get exhausted and then have to come in and get a recharge before heading out. So, but super fun going out. Anyway, it was a really good event, lots of fun times. And I thought we could talk about some of the content takeaways that we had from your AI sessions, from some of the talks that we saw, all sorts of stuff. That maybe I'll go through a few, and then maybe we'll just kind of go back and forth here on some of the big takeaways we had. The first one I'll go through is a pricing one. So I've been beating the pricing drum, raise your prices pretty loudly on the podcast, probably ad nauseum and obnoxiously for years now, but wanted to bring in a speaker who could do that much more persuasively and just eloquently than I could. And I think we succeeded. Casey Brown from Boost Profits came in, and I think a lot of times people think, I know I need to raise my prices. And we definitely got some feedback too, being like, you had a whole keynote on this. This could have been something that could have been said in, 2 minutes. We didn't need a whole keynote for it. But the thing that I loved from her talk, and she was so persuasive in this, was one of the quotes I took was, it's not about knowing the math on pricing. It's about living the math on pricing. And she made such a good case for A, you are probably not increasing your prices out of fear. B, you underestimate how much power you have. Not everyone, but most people have. And C, that like another quote she had was, every single percentage point of price. So,
game changer for me, that little bit. And I know that, we know that in our heads. But when someone like Casey stands there and so passionately talks about it, it's a reminder. And so, it was brilliant.
Yeah, like every single percentage point of price is 5 to 10x magnified on the bottom line, depending on your margins. And you should protect each single percent of price increase like a mountain of gold. Like, if people... So anyway, I thought that was fantastic.
It was time well spent. Like, I agree. Like, maybe we didn't all need, such a long sort of keynote. But in actual fact, I think we did. Because I think people were sort of initially sitting there going, oh, we don't really need to hear all of this. But the fact that so much time was spent on it means that it was given the due emphasis. It was given the emphasis that it actually needed, even though at face value, it's a simple concept.
Yeah, it's kind of like, I think I likened it to reading a book sometimes. Like, most books do not need to be 250 pages. Most books could be 10 pages and you get the bullet points and that's the information you need. But I think one of the reasons, there's two reasons why books are so much longer. A, because it's really hard to sell a 10-page hardcover book for $39 at Barnes & Noble, right? A. But then B, sometimes you need 250 pages to let the thoughts and the concepts marinate and beat into your brain. Yeah. So anyway, that was my first one. So Katrina, what about you? Do you want to talk about maybe some of your takeaways from the AI session and the AI discussions you had? You had a handful from there.
Yeah, sure. So one of the things that people sort of would come up to me and sort of say was, like, how do I actually do this? How do I get this into my business? And because we're, mostly entrepreneurs, we love fiddling with things and we love, playing with tools. We love technology. All these entrepreneurs are sitting there and saying, how do I get this into my business? Where do I start? And one of the things that from one of the takeaways in the breakout session that I did was we had a project on, it's not you, it's someone else. So we spoke about the advent, that the emergence of what, just for argument's sake, I'm going to call an AI manager. So a little bit like a prompt engineer or someone who understands how to speak or how to control the generative AI tools that are coming out. So just like we're all very comfortable with the idea of having an SEO manager or hiring an SEO agency to help us with growth in our businesses and to put in tools that monitor the growth and give us feedback on our businesses, on our stores, I think there's going to be an AI manager that comes in. And so I don't think the entrepreneurs themselves, the founders of the businesses, need to fully grasp AI and how to integrate it. I think that you need to find someone who is an integrator. And I'll give you one example. So if you run a $10 million business and let's say you've got a team of, I don't know, I'm just going to make it up, 8 or 10 customer service personnel. And so with that size of a customer team, you've got one customer service manager. You can't turn around to that customer service manager and say, right, I want you to implement a co-pilot, an AI co-pilot who's going to help us make sales, or and a co-pilot that's going to instantly respond to customer queries about which size is best for me, or is this in stock, or you know, what are the refund policies in this store. What you need to do instead is you need to have an AI manager who is able to speak to the customer service manager and say, okay, we're going to start implementing this technology. You need to gear up for training. You need to teach your team members, the customer service reps, what guardrails are. You need to teach them how to work together with the AI, not combat it or not to be fearful of it. What are the policies we're going to have around when there's a prompt injection attack via the chatbots? How will we use the AI to score the results of a live chat, whether the sale was successfully made? Or how aggressive will the AI be in terms of hard sells? And I think the FDA will eventually get involved with this sort of these ethical sort of conversations. But an AI manager is able to have the space, have the mental space and the ability to research this completely new technology and this completely new opportunity, and to be able to guide a customer service manager. So that's just one idea for one of the things we spoke about. Was it's not always at ECF Live, it's not always about tactics and strategy. Sometimes there are ethical conversations. There are sort of more paradigm, you know, changing conversations around, well, how will this ultimately change the fabric of our e-commerce stores?
Yeah, well, to tie it to something that Chris Rush, so Chris Rush is he owns an e-commerce store called Hi-Fi Sound Connection. He also owns an outsourcing agency in the Philippines, staffoutsourcing.com. I think they've got, I don't know, 600-700 people in-house. It's pretty amazing. And he spoke a couple of things that tie into what you said. You know, he has a mid eight-figure business with, I don't know, four US staff, which is just boggles the mind. And one of the things that stood out to me from his talk was he said, you know, it's, if you're going to embrace this, and I think increasingly we are, like one of the downsides of remote work, I think people haven't fully realized, and I think we're just starting to hit the stride with this, is now if you can do your job from San Francisco or from Tucson or from Sydney, you can do it from anywhere in the world. You can do it from, you know, you can do it from Buenos Aires or from anywhere, right? And so there's going to be a lot more labor coming in to compete with traditional Western roles, especially high up ones. I mean, he made the point like, hey, I have a mid eight figure business. Every single role that you don't have to physically touch something in the US that you need to run that, CMO, CFO, all this kind of stuff, I have been able to hire for successfully and at a high level in the Philippines. And so his point was, one, there's going to be a lot of roles that disappear in the US and in kind of Western countries, I think. That's one part. But the part he did say, for the roles that are remaining, you know, he said it's tough to talk to your team about these kind of things because there's a level of fear. And sometimes it's merited, which is from an efficiency and outsourcing perspective. But he said, you can also really approach this as a, hey, we're bringing in more people because we want to be able to help you do the things that you focus on best. Like all the stuff that you aren't good at or don't like or hate, like the same reason we as entrepreneurs bring in outsourcers, because we can focus on our unique ability. You have that same thing for your team members. So whether it's AI, like you're talking about replacing team members or supplementing them, because a lot of times it could either be about cost cutting, or if you have a great AI integration with people on your team, maybe it just makes them three or four times as productive and prolific with the same quality output if they're able to do stuff. So anyway, that empathy for him about how he approached talking to his team about bringing in outsourced staff, I think also applies to as you're starting to integrate AI into your business for team members.
Yeah. And in the forums, we're now after these, you know, the ECF Live, in the forums now, we are having these conversations. So Chris and I have been going back and forth on how to hire. And those conversations are now extending into this realm of the AI. And that's the value of the community as well, is like we're very happy and open with discussing these real issues that are happening right now in depth. And he's just written like a huge sort of forum thread about how he is doing this. this, which is just absolute gold. But, and I want to just add to that a paper. I'll find it again in a minute, but I want to put it in the show notes. There's a paper that has just been released by a study team at Cornell University that is talking about, it's not necessarily that these white collar jobs or mid-tier jobs are going to disappear, but they're going to be reduced. So I think that they're starting to say that 70% of these jobs are going to have 30% of their work affected by AI. And I'm quoting those percentages incorrectly, but in the show notes, we'll put a link to that paper. The Cornell University have just released that. And I think it's great guidance because I think it's great guidance on how you, as a larger e-commerce business, how you can expect the transition from AI to affect those more traditional roles.
Hey, it's Andrew here with a quick aside. And you obviously love e-commerce. You're interested in that. And so I wanted to make sure you're aware of the private community we have at E-Commerce Fuel for 7- and 8-figure e-commerce brand owners. And it's something we've been building for close to a decade now with over 1,100 members across the globe. And our secret sauce, like the name implies, is that everyone inside has deep experience doing this with an owner mindset. And so what does that mean? It means you get, when you log onto our form, you get fast, on-point answers to your most pressing questions, regardless of whether that's you're negotiating a new lease for a warehouse, or maybe you're negotiating with UPS or USPS or FedEx about shipping rates or pickup times, or potentially you're just looking to find a great outsourcer, or wondering if you can even outsource your content. Is that something anyone has had success with? You can tap into this huge knowledge and brain trust across the globe and get answers within hours, sometimes even minutes. So it's an incredibly active forum with experienced people. You get to plug into an amazing network worldwide. A lot of our members, when they travel, if they touch down in Dallas or Sydney or London or Bozeman, Montana, or whatever it is, oftentimes they'll reach out to other ECF members. You know, obviously a little harder to do potentially right now, but and see if, you know, they want to get together for a beer to connect and oftentimes get to know a new friend. So it's an amazing network, as well as invites to our member-only events like ECF Live, which is our annual summit gathering for about 200 people. And then finally, the intelligence in our community just that's shared helps you avoid making really costly hiring and software mistakes. So our members write reviews on what they're using, their software tools, their agencies, completely unbiased, completely from their own experience. And so you can avoid making that, you know, hiring that agency that's an absolute nightmare, but you don't know about it. Or you can hone in on the one that actually does a really good job. It saves you a ton of time and money from bad hiring and software decisions. So if any of this sounds interesting, head on over to ecommercefuel.com and you can learn more about the community, what's included, and apply for membership as well. All right, let's go ahead and jump back in to the discussion.
Katrina, you're probably going to laugh at me about this one. And this is a small takeaway, but for me, it's been big because it's something I think I've been doing suboptimally for a long time. I have an amazing team member in the Philippines, been working together for like 12 years. For 12 years, I have paid her via PayPal, and it's convenient. It's easy. She actually kind of, but the point being, I think the spreads when you pay via PayPal and it gets converted into her local currency are not great. And I heard from somebody, I can't even remember who it was, but recommended Wise for paying contractors overseas. Yeah, in terms of, and so anyway, I was looking at that, I was thinking, I will probably, even if it's just my very valued team member gets an extra, you know, 0.5%, 1%, 1.5% on the spread, on a very competitive spread for the currency exchange. Like that's a huge win. So you do use Wise right now for paying
people? Yeah. It used to be called TransferWise. So for anyone who's trying to Google it, it was called TransferWise, and now it's just wise.com. So WISE.com. We used to use PayPal as well. We've used Payoneer. We've used bank transfers. We've used everything over the last 20 years. Wise is now the most seamless way to do it, because what you do is that the freelancer sets up a US bank account on the Wise platform. So they don't have to have a US bank account as such. It's just like a proxy account on the Wise platform. And then you, as a US business owner, you have also obviously a US bank account in the Wise platform, and you can just sweep payments through. So there are loads of automations as well. So we combine it with a tool called Hubstaff. And so when our VAs and team complete their week, their works their week's work worth of work. It literally just takes the Hub staff calculation and just sweeps it straight into their bank accounts. And they don't lose any money in the currency conversion because it's going from a bank account to a bank account, if you know what I mean. So then they can choose to take it out into whichever other platform. In Africa, they take it out into M-Pesa. In, you know, the Philippines, they might take it out into their bank account or onto the mobile app. So they can then, they have far more control over that end use of their money, whereas PayPal just doesn't provide that.
So, I mean, every time you convert from currency to currency, you're paying a commission in the terms of a spread. So that also allows, that just basically allows them to limit potentially the number of times they have to pay that conversion tax.
Yeah. And I know it seems like a little thing for us as entrepreneurs, but those make a big difference to people in that in other areas where we're hiring. And it also shows that you're a thoughtful employer, that you care. And loyalty is something that you can't buy. And so it's these little intrinsic rewards, these little intrinsic moments in the way you conduct your business that garners more loyalty. And as we know, loyalty is something that's incredibly valuable in the outsourcing industry.
Katrina, can you talk a little bit too about one of the takeaways you had either, I think this is maybe something you brought into the event, but also something I think became more entrenched and confirmed as you talked to people in these different sessions. You think with AI, the common perception is that content is going to get easier for people, but you actually take the very opposite side of that. Well, you think content's going to get more expensive and harder. Can you talk a little bit about why?
Yeah. So because I'm obviously in the content game, that's what I do. I think I'm hoping I have a tiny bit more insight than some of the others. It's one of these perspectives that everyone's running around going, woo, you know, we've got like, you know, we can just now produce loads of content. You know, we can produce thousands. It's a bit like, you know, we can produce thousands of blog articles. We can produce, you know, and I sort of think no one needs thousands of anything. Like, let's all just calm the farm, settle down, you know, put your socks back on. It's not that AI is allowing us to now produce it. Well, it does. So there's going to be a swathe of society that says, this is fantastic. I can now produce thousands of blog posts on this topic. Quantity is not always what you need. Sometimes you need quality. I would think all the entrepreneurs would agree that sometimes quantity growth in your business is very useful, but sometimes quality growth is much more manageable. It's a bit easier to sort of get a hold of. So I think that content just got far more expensive and it got far more difficult to do. So I'll explain the expensive bit and then I'll explain the difficult bit. It's gotten expensive because organic traffic is rarer now. So with the new paradigm of search, there is this thing called zero click, which means that a searcher comes to a website to find the best fountain pen. And Google's now answering that for you. And Bard will answer that for you. And so will Bing Chat and all those new sort of search AI tools that are coming through. And it will just tell you, well, this is the best fountain pen to buy. And so then there's no longer need to click. It will create. And what they're also saying is that because we're going to get all our answers from these AI chat tools, we don't need to search the search engines. So therefore, we don't need to click through to people's websites to read that blog article with more information about it. Because again, there's this zero click aspect, so no one's clicking through the website. So, Andrew, what happens when something becomes very rare? It gets more
valuable.
So it's going to be harder. It's going to be much more difficult because the organic traffic channels are going to become more expensive. And this is something that Jake over at Tadpool told me. They have a lot of VCs that sign up to their data analytics package. He said because they get a lot of data that tells the VCs how much a company, a business, an e-commerce business should be making, what it's projected to make in the future. And he said that every VC is asking for between 60 to 65% of their traffic to be organic. So think about it. So if you want to sell your business, if your exit is to sell your business, or if it's just that VCs think that a more solid, reliable, grounded, you know, stable business has 60 to 65% of organic traffic, and I've just said to you, well, there's a lot less organic traffic and it's far more expensive now, that's going to be a problem. So the people who need that organic traffic for an exit, it's a bit of a tricky thing. So, and why has it become more difficult? Well, everyone's now producing content to a slightly higher level. It's this thing where to produce a reasonably coherent article that touches on all the main points of how to clean a fountain pen, you know, you do this and then you do this and then you do this and then you do this. To write a reasonable coherent article is now just the baseline. Everyone's doing it. So what does it take to actually produce a piece of content that is sticky and shareable, that has a dwell time, that has a conversion mechanism in it? So as a result at Copysmiths, we are now very focused on building, on creating content that has true depth of understanding and experience in each article. It's not something that's just produced by an AI. We are also mapping in conversion mechanisms and dwell mechanisms into every single piece of content we create, because the content's got to be so much better now. So to reach that level of complexity, do you know what I mean? Like that baseline, it's just shifted up.
But I do. And, if I can add, one thing to that, Katrina?
Yeah, your turn to talk. Go for it.
I just right along, right in that same vein of thought you're in. I think when you look at what's becomes, we talked about this a little bit on the panel, you know, what becomes more valuable with AI. And we talked about a number of things, live events in person, kind of all these other things. But I think one thing that we didn't get into, but I feel very strongly about, is if you have any kind of proprietary data set that you can use, I think that becomes incredibly valuable, because, you know, if you look at the data sets now that are getting pulled from, they're pulling from the web, right? So everyone is able to has that advantage. But when I think about, like, for e-commerce, for example, we have 10 years of archives from store owners being much more candid about what's working, what's not, hiring, tech, failures, successes, in ways they don't speak about probably publicly as much. And so to be able to have that data set that you can feed into an algorithm and create something that can synthesize that's going to be a huge advantage for any store. And it doesn't even have to be a community like this. Like, let's say, you know, if you sell something very niche, maybe you sell, I'm just pulling this out of thin air, but maybe you have a very niche hobby site that sells RC remote controlled high speed racing boats you take on lakes, you know, totally random. But there's a whole world, I'm sure, to that. And if you have 5, 6, 7 years of emails, if you have a proprietary knowledge base, especially if you don't make that public, if you have sales data, all this kind of stuff that you can feed in, all of a sudden you have an advantage that, you know, the rest of the web doesn't have. So I don't know, we might even get to a point where, as odd as it sounds, I have no idea if this is right, but it's a possibility, some of these proprietary data sets might be guarded a little bit more quickly or a little bit more carefully, because if everyone else can scan them, analyze them, serve them up on a silver platter for free, and you're one of your few advantages left is being able to have those in your own garden and serving them to your customers, that might make sense to guard a little more carefully. I don't know, but I'm just riffing on it.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And this goes back to that, having an AI manager in your company and you deciding on how your data is used. So one of the things I'm kind of amused by and horrified by is that there's all these tools that are popping up, these little thin layer apps that are built on tops of the LLMs, on top of the GPTs. And, you know, this one that's just popped up right now, which is called Script AI. So not Scripter, but Script AI. We'll put in the show notes. It allows e-commerce stores now, it's a script writer, to very quickly create hundreds of reels and shorts and TikTok scripts so that you can test and create all that content en masse. Now, the way it's writing those scripts is obviously a proprietary system to that particular tool. But then you're just the same. You're the same as everyone else. You're producing based on that same little formula. You're just producing vanilla. You're producing that beige, you know. You're just not producing anything that's truly unique with your own brand values and your own voice and your own quirks. So that's why I think it's going to become very important for people to understand that with an AI manager on your team, or whomever that sort of role is, I mean, it could be even the CTO or the CIO in a team, but when they have an understanding that not only is the data that's collected in, say, let's say the forum that we've got at ECF, but also how does the AI interact with that data, that is incredibly valuable. And I think that businesses in the future will be sold. So I believe that if you want to exit from an e-commerce business in the future, if you've cobbled together a whole bunch of AI tools that you use, I think your business will be far less valuable than if you have built that in-house so it's proprietary to you, so that you've always got this differentiation, so that you hold on to your garden, as you say.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting. Katrina, we have one more takeaway each before we need to start wrapping up. But I think the last one I'll probably touch on is, I always try to end the events kind of talking about a lot of interesting, great, smart, successful people here, but also it's e-commerce has been pretty difficult the last couple of years. So I always try to touch on some note of that so that everyone doesn't leave thinking they're the least successful person in the room, which is usually not the case, almost certainly not the case, because it's a struggle out there. But I one conversation stood out to me. I had a conversation with someone who had been in Silicon Valley for years and was very much on the up and up track in many of the circles there, and kind of came to this moment where they realized, like, wow, everyone's rich, but everyone's working like crazy and is totally miserable. Yes. And it was this, were very candid. It was just like, I hit this point where I was like, what am I doing? And I've chatted with other people in the Valley. I think Silicon Valley is such an easy example of it because there's so much concentrated wealth there. And the comparisons, you know, even people that are wildly successful, they compare themselves to people worth, you know, $500 million and they feel inadequate, which is just insane. But we all do that to some degree. Anyway, it was just a good reminder for me that, like, comparison is so easy to do.
The thief of joy.
Yeah, the thief of joy. I think it's one of my favorite quotes that you just, you know, kind of mentioned. And I don't know, I thought it just was a good reminder for me that, like, man, this happens. It's easy to look at Silicon Valley and kind of be like, oh man, I can't believe they do that. But I think we all do that to some degree. And I think it's easy to come away from an event like that and do that as well. So just a call to not let yourself fall into that approach. Because a lot of us are, and that's one thing I appreciated about Shaquille Prosser's talk, was incredible entrepreneur.
Really wasn't he brilliant? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, feel free to talk about him because I'm kind of going on here, but
I agree. That's one of the things I think that's quite different about the ECF community. But it's also, it comes from maturity, personal maturity as well, and a bit of growth. But I don't run an 8-figure business or we've got a couple of people who are literally running 10-figure businesses in the community. And I had the opportunity to meet one of those people, and that particular person, I'm not sure if I'm allowed to sort of say these things, but that particular person, he uses his business to run a school to help people. And he also uses his business to feed meals to children who are, you know, who are on the poverty line. And for me, I went up to him and I did not feel intimidated because I'm not trying to compete with him on his business. What I wanted to do was I wanted to learn from him about how his ethics and his morals and why he does that and how he can, you know, how he does that. And so that's the thing, is it's only if you choose to compare. If you choose to compare yourself with these people, then you don't benefit from that. It's only if you say to yourself, well, it is what it is, and I have what I have, and, you know, they don't have what I have, and I have what, you know, I don't have what they have. But, like, for me to be able to have a conversation with a person of that caliber, who of course is an incredibly impressive human, but I was more impressed not by how much money he makes, but by what he's doing with his money. And for me, he was one of the biggest inspirations. His name's Sunil. He was one of the biggest inspirations for me at that event. And I hear it all the time as well when people come into the community. They say, oh, like, I'm not running a big store. And I say, you might not be, but you can contribute in other ways. There's always something unique about what you do or your approach, and that's your contribution. And so you must lean into it.
Yeah, totally agreed. He was, it was kind of given the semi-private nature of it, don't want to talk too much about him. But Sunil was, well, you just use his first name, incredibly humble, impressive entrepreneur. Was amazing to get to meet him for the first time. So next year, we have the dates already set. If you're in the community, this is an event just for our community members. So if you'd love to be a part of it, please do join. And that's how you get access to register for it. It's actually, the dates are set March 5th through the 8th. We're going back to New Orleans. The first time we've ever gone back to a city. We had so much fun there in 2019, I think it was, that we decided to go back. So March 5th through the 8th, 2024 are the dates. Yeah, I think we're, you know, it's funny, we kind of all, you do an event and you think through it and try to figure out how it's going to change and iterate over time. And I think next year, I still need to noodle on this a little bit and chat with the team, but I have a hunch next year we will definitely not be growing. And if anything, we may be shrinking a little bit. Like when we look at this event, the goal of this event is really to bring our community closer together, and especially for kind of three groups: the leaders in our community, our new members in the community, and increasingly we want to try to carve out some spots for underrepresented groups in our community as well. And so I think we will likely be focusing on those three groups a little bit more next year, and maybe shrinking the event to the point where it's not a massive, but not having it, not continuing to grow it, and kind of trying to focus a little bit more on building the connections within the really, you know, the people that are bringing in and actively investing in the community and being more intentional about kind of some of those.
Are you going for quality, not quantity, Andrew?
Yes, I mean, kind of a similar theme. I think it's because, I mean, these events, they're wonderful to do, but Patrick was joking today. He's like, man, I think if you look at how much we make from this event and how much time the three of us, myself, Audrey, and Patrick put into it, I think we'd make about $10 an hour. And I think, Patrick, I think we make substantially less than $10 an hour when you look at how much we're doing for this. So we're doing it to invest in the community. And I think thinking with that being the primary purpose, especially for some of those leaders and other folks, is probably the direction we're going to be going next year.
We trust you. Like, you've built it from scratch. And I think it's actually the 10th anniversary. You said that there's been 8 so far, but I thought I heard that this was the 10th anniversary that we were coming up to. Like, you've guided us brilliantly so far, and it's been amazing so far. And so I trust the process. Go for it. Why not?
Yeah. Well, thank you. Appreciate it. And I think this will be actually the 10th anniversary of the first one. The first one we did was 2014, but we had this little inconvenient thing called COVID that made us skip a year. So it's actually the 9th event, but the 10th anniversary, if that makes sense.
So. Gotcha. Okay. So I don't need to come to that one. I can come to the one after.
Exactly. I'd miss the 9th. The 10th is the one after is when we'll really blow it out. Yeah. Katrina, thank you and before we kind of wrap up with stuff, thank you for being on the panel, for leading the session. Like, the amount of time and effort you put into the workshop I got your kind of preview of it, and I was like, oh my goodness, this is unbelievable how much time and effort and energy and thought you put into it. It's so cool. So if you weren't necessarily, it's just amazing. So,
well, redo. Sorry, Andrew, to interrupt. I'm going to do a redo of the presentation. I've been putting it into the forum. So for anyone who does want to get access to, you know, not just the slides, but a full redo of it, it'll just be in the forum. So it's another great reason to join the community.
Amazing. Yeah. If you all of our members will have access to all of our video recordings and slide decks and everything from the event. So, and before we wrap up, a couple of final things I want to say, but can you give a shout out for Copysmiths? Like, tell people what Copysmiths is and what you do and like who should connect with you if they're listening and is a good fit.
So copysmiths.com, there's a few pretenders out there with similar names, so it's copysmiths.com. But what we do is we're just very good at creating an organic traffic to e-commerce stores. So we do work for a few other types of businesses, not just e-commerce stores, but we're very good at creating a really soluble, reliable funnel of organic traffic. And then, as I was saying before, what we do is we have conversion mechanisms and dwell mechanisms, so we can get people to stay on your blog, and we can get them to click through to your product pages and category pages. And after that, you're on your own, because you probably have an ugly baby. But it's very, very hard to tell people they have ugly babies. And that's something that I've learned along the way. Because people will say, but I'm getting hundreds of thousands of visitors. We had this one client in the business. Oh God, it was funny. But this one client in the business, we literally took them from 800 uniques a month to 200,000 visitors a month, right? And they would ring me and they would say, but we're not converting. And I just could never bring myself to say, but you have an ugly baby and that's why. Because they were selling a product that for hundreds of dollars that other people gave away for free, but they never thought that that was a problem. So anyway, so that's what we do, is we create really solid organic traffic to e-commerce stores. We're really amazingly good at that, and we can get them through to your product page and your category page, and after that, it's your problem.
Very cool. So if you don't have an ugly baby, copysmiths.com.
Check them out.
You guys have done some great work for e-commerce fuel. So high quality stuff, can definitely recommend and adore. So I want to thank everyone who spoke, everyone who attended, also our team, Patrick or Audrey, especially for being the point woman on the event, Patrick, Roland, everyone else who helped out, and everyone who showed up. And also, we had some amazing sponsors. Postscript was our primary lead sponsor, SMS marketing with incredible support from the human side. Getida, that's Getida. They do Amazon FBA and just Amazon in general auditing. So all the potential overages or mischarges, they audit all that and get you money back when Bezos and company is overcharging you. And then finally, Zipify apps. Their big one, of course, is One Click Upsell, where it's one of the easiest ways to add products and increase your AOV on your store. And also special thanks to Mercury, FlexPoint, QuietLight Brokerage, Revision Legal, Finale, Fulfill, and A2X for being a part of the event and making it possible this year. So Katrina, thanks for the wrap up. Thanks for coming all the way across the Pacific, flying over, fighting in the waves, putting up with having to deal with me for another year. And always love having you there, and appreciate you doing a kind of a inside baseball recap of everything. Thanks for being game for it.
And happy birthday to me, huh?
And happy birthday. Man, I'm getting owned on both sides of this podcast. Well played. Happy birthday, Katrina.
Thank you, Andrew. It's been a pleasure.
Given you've made it to the end of the episode, there's a pretty good chance you're fairly serious about this e-commerce stuff, which is why you should check out the E-Commerce Fuel community. It's a vetted, vibrant community for 7- and 8-figure brand owners. And joining gives you access to a lively discussion forum for experienced founders sharing insights and getting help, access to our library of over 20,000 member reviews on everything from agencies to tech to lawyers to all the things that, you know, founders are making hiring decisions or purchasing decisions on to run their business, and invites to member events throughout the year. So if that sounds interesting, you can apply for membership and learn more at ecommercefuel.com. Big thanks to one-click upsell from Zipify Apps. Rapidly increase your AOV by offering targeted, high-converting upsells. You can get started with them at ecommercefuel.com/upsell. And also to Fulfill.io, an ERP designed specifically to streamline complex e-commerce businesses and the highest rated ERP among our community members. Learn more at ecommercefuel.com/fulfill. Thanks so much for listening. Work hard, adventure often, and I'm looking forward to seeing you again next Friday.
This is the ASY Radio Network, live from New York.